This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the KTTH debate coverage starting live Thursday night at 6 p.m. uninterrupted, the final debate of this campaign between President Trump and Joe Biden. We're going to be covering that live plus analysis afterwards Thursday night at 6. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Crime.
Homicides have hit a record number in Seattle. The last homicide came in at number 49 in Seattle. 49 homicides, and we're not even to the election, which is, I'm hoping not, but I'm wondering whether or not it's going to create a lot more anxiety and anger and violence, domestic arguments. I have a legitimate fear of that. But right now, we're at number 49, which is higher than any year we've had on the books since 2008. And who could have seen this coming, this rise in homicides? All of us. Literally all of us. Just 2 months ago, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg said to King 5,
"It is a concerning thing that we've had almost as many homicides this year so far as we did all of last year."
Now, keep in mind, that was said in August. We've now, right now, as of today, have a higher number. And then when you go in and you look at the types of homicides, 12 of the 13 in King County were domestic violence homicides during the pandemic, which is another one of those unintended consequences to the coronavirus mandates. That when you keep people who are already in abusive relationships, when you keep them inside of the home together with their abuser, there is more time for the abuser to get violent. And by the way, when we say domestic violence, we don't just mean spouses, but also we had the case last week of a 17-year-old boy allegedly murdering his mother. Now, this is all happening. Again, we say, most recently, we've been saying this a lot. These things aren't happening in a bubble. These things aren't happening, you know, as one-offs. This is part of a larger pattern of issues in the city of Seattle and in King County as a whole. 118 police officers with the SPD have left the department. 118. That is the highest number of separations they've ever had. We now have the lowest number of quote-unquote deployable patrol officers that we've had. We're lower than the low of 1990, where we had something like 1,272 patrol officers. Now we have 1,203. And that number, by the way, is misleading because when they say deployable, they don't mean what you think. So we got that happening. We have both the city and the county moving to defund the police. SPD already made, or I should say Seattle Council already made some moves this year on defunding the police. Dale Constantine on a county level, he of course is the King County executive, moving to cut millions and millions and millions of dollars from the King County Sheriff's Office. Meanwhile, the King County Council is hoping you'll be foolish enough to give them the power to not just dictate how the department should be run, but give them the power to appoint a sheriff instead of allowing you the ability to actually vote someone in. And then you're looking, generally speaking, at some of the other issues that are happening. Arson, for example, up in Seattle. Homelessness up in Seattle. I've never seen more public homelessness than I've seen in the last several weeks. I went over the weekend to a bunch of different parks because I wanted to get a general sense of what the parks now look like. I've seen some reports of it. I've personally, when I walk past Denny Park, for example, in South Lake Union, I've seen what's happened there. I went to Ballard, and there are portions of the city, not just Ballard Commons Park, but portions of Ballard itself, completely engulfed in tents. We have a remarkable, an alarming increase in homelessness. I've got the photos up right now. I took a bunch of photos. I selected the 28 most egregious. Just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to it. It's scary what's happening in this city and what's happening in this county. Does it seem like anyone from the city or the county are addressing this? Are they talking about it at all? Because this station talks about it. In this case, we pulled this story from King 5. They're bringing attention to it. I know Cairo 7 TV and Como TV and Q13, they're highlighting some of these issues. So the media is actually talking about it. But do you get the sense at all that politicians who are in charge of coming up with the laws and putting the pressure on individual departments to enforce laws, do you get a sense that they are even aware that this is happening? Andrew Lewis, Seattle City Council member, has he said anything about Denny Park? Because I'm actually one of his constituents. I live in South Lake Union. I get his email newsletter every single week. Haven't seen him talking about it. I'm right now on day number 4, or I suppose I should say email number 4, trying to get a statement from Mayor Jenny Durkan, even acknowledging that last week a homeless man nearly burned to death an officer by putting a burning log, a stick, in this patrol officer's vehicle. While he was in it, it was torched. He narrowly escaped. I don't even need the mayor to come out and give me a statement saying it's wrong to commit that kind of violence. I just want a statement that says, I acknowledge it occurred and I'm the mayor of Seattle. That's literally all I'm asking for. And they are ignoring it. They are completely ignoring that request. What in the world is happening here? It's what we all feared. That when you've got a bunch of ideologues in charge who are blinded by their politics, they either completely ignore the suffering that's going on, the dangers that are posed to virtually everyone who lives here, or they simply don't care because they think long term we're going to be in a better position because of their ideological proposals. Be it going after businesses and running them out of town, or taxing all of us and allowing homeless people to take control of our parks. That, by the way, we have spent millions and millions and millions and millions and millions more dollars trying to maintain. All to give them to homeless people who, and I saw photos of it yesterday, I witnessed it, needles being left outside of a children's playground. No one is talking about this, which is a reminder to you, to all of us, that we're the ones who not only have to talk about this, but become better activists. Because there's that whole election thing happening right now. Most of, if not all of you, have that ballot in hand. Maybe it's on your kitchen table right now. Maybe you got it on Saturday. You're waiting to vote. Some of you today will be going home and finding it in your mailbox. Not only is it important for you to vote, something we all already understand, but it's important for you to step up and make sure your neighbors, your friends, your family members, your producers, they understand what's on the line here, to put pressure on them to make the right choices when it comes to some of these candidates, some of these campaigns. In King County, for example, you have the ability to say no to the King County Council as they want to take over and appoint a sheriff so you don't have to vote for one. That is egregious. What are you doing about it? What are you doing about it? What are you doing to push back? You have an attorney general in the state that is more interested in going after Donald Trump than he is about protecting you. What are you doing about it? You've got ideologues in Olympia who pushed through a kindergarten sex ed bill, despite people overwhelmingly saying no. And by the way, when I say people, I mean parents were surveyed. No matter where they did the survey, no matter the county, including King County, overwhelmingly, people said, well, like, I think sex ed is important, but for K through third grade, huh? So what are you doing to reject Referendum 90? Beyond just voting, reject Referendum 90. Are you going that extra mile? Literally, are you walking that extra mile and talking to people in your own neighborhood about what's on the line? That's what it's going to take. You're listening to The Jason Rancho, 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, Sue Bird, WNBA superstar, to the 10,000 people who watch, she says you are racist and homophobic for not watching her play basketball. We're going to get into that and so much more. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to the blog I posted, 28 photos of the shocking and exploding homeless crisis here in Seattle. I think even if you are generally aware of what's been going on, these photos will completely shock you. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So if you don't watch the WNBA women's basketball, the league star, Sue Bird, who's local, she thinks you're a bigot. Specifically, she thinks you're a sexist and a homophobe, and also you're racist on top of it all. Which kind of seems like an odd pitch to me if you're going to try to get people to actually tune into your games.
It's not great marketing.
It's just, hey, if you don't watch it, we're going to call you a bigot. That kind of shame, just generally speaking, doesn't work.
Yeah, the way marketing goes is like you're trying to reach the people who you're not already reaching. Yeah. So if you call them all a bunch of homophobes, it's kind of, you're starting off on the wrong foot.
Just try not to offend them, is all I'm saying. So Sue Bird has been getting into the difference between women's basketball and women's soccer and its popularity and ratings and fandom and whatnot. And part of it is because she is married to Megan Rapinoe.
There you go.
I know. I always do that. And she made similar comments, I want to say last week, maybe, about why people are more presumably interested in women's soccer than they are in women's basketball. And so Sue Bird's been doing these interviews both with ESPN and, in this case, CNN. And she explains why she believes basketball is less popular than soccer when it comes to women participation.
To be completely, like, blunt, but also kind of simple.
And stupid.
Soccer players generally are, you know, cute little white girls.
Well, you know what? I've always thought that about Jordan Morris.
You did?
Cute little white.
He's a cute little white girl.
He's talking about women.
And I think basketball players, we're all shapes and sizes. We have, like I said earlier, you know, 70 to 80% black women, a lot of gay women. We're tall, we're big. And I think there's just maybe like this intimidation factor with that. You know, people are quick to talk about it, judge it, put it down. No. And soccer, you just don't see that just based on how they look.
So, of course, just on the surface, this is a really, really, really bad argument, especially claiming that people are racist, right? What are the most popular sports in the United States? Football, basketball, right?
Yeah, fair.
Are they overwhelmingly white?
No.
Not even a little bit, right? They're overwhelmingly run by black athletes. And yet, they're popular. Now, it is true, their ratings have been down as of recent, but even with poor ratings, they are incredibly popular. So I don't understand the argument that they won't watch the WNBA because there are black women, but people will adore, become super fans of sports with black men. That's a bad argument. Now, it is true, it's harder to prove or disprove the argument about homophobia in this case, mostly because no league has a whole bunch of openly gay players the way, presumably, based on this comment, the WNBA does. Now, I don't know if does the WNBA have a lot of openly gay players, or is it just as a percentage of the league.
No, they have a lot of openly gay players.
And they're open. Okay. Now, if you want to point to another league that has a bunch of openly gay male players and judge the stats there, I suppose we can have a conversation. She can't prove nor disprove any of what she's saying. But she says society really especially doesn't like gay black athletes.
I think the problem is, it's not the marketing per se. The problem is how society and how the outside world is willing to accept the cute girl next door, but not willing to accept or embrace or, you know, I guess not judge these basketball players who are tall, black, gay. That's kind of, to me, where the issue is.
Well, it's not. This is not about marketing. There is no marketing for the WNBA, not really. Certainly not in comparison to the marketing we get for the NBA or the NFL or even the MLS. So it's about the marketing. No, it's not. You can pretend all you want that there is no difference in skill or athleticism between men and women. You can pretend that all you want. Doesn't make it so. It doesn't. And by the way, we do the exact same thing on behalf of male sports. This whole idea, oh, it's sexist to compare men and women. No, it's not. We compare men and men all the time. We compare male leagues to male leagues. Producer Peyton, which is a better soccer product, the MLS or the English Premier League?
The English Premier League.
Say that all the time. People make those comparisons all the time. In fact, when you've got really, really good male athletes on the American side, considering whether or not they're going to play in the MLS or in Britain or the Bundesliga in Germany, what do they normally do? They go overseas because the style of play is better. We have those conversations all the time. Style of play is important. And the marketplace, at least in this country, because I don't know what it's like in other countries as far as the female leagues. In this country, the marketplace has said, we prefer the style of play to male sports, at least in basketball. That's what they said. The average viewership for the entirety of the playoffs on ESPN for the WNBA was 257,000 people across the country. Even the NBA games that are suffering right now due to lower than normal ratings pull in millions and millions of people. You are already working with a small group of people interested in basketball just as a sport. For example, I don't care about basketball. I don't watch any of it. So, number one, you got to appeal to people who like basketball. And then number two, you're also making the additional argument, you have to like the style of play for women's leagues. Style of play is different. You can make the argument it's better. You can make the argument it's worse. But it's different. We know that it's different. The same way, by the way, when you go in and you look at individual teams in different leagues, their style of play is going to be different. But overall, you get a certain level of style of play, of athleticism. But let's go with this. 257,000. She argues if you're not watching, which is the vast, 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 vast majority of not just sports fans, but Americans. Why aren't women and gay people watching your sports? I mean, I'm presuming that of that 257,000, that there's probably a lot of women and gay people there. That's my assumption, and Peyton. That's my assumption. Why aren't more women watching? There's a lot more women than 257,000 in this country, right? There was just that women's march over the weekend. Why are they not watching? Why is it that the woke dudes who go out of their way to tell you how woke they are because they're feminists and they care about the storm, why aren't they watching? Are they also sexist and homophobic and racist? Or is it maybe, again, just maybe, something to do with the product? And it's not the problem of the viewers. Is that possible? Is it just possible? Why, by the way, Tacoma Defiance? What's their TV ratings?
You know what? They don't have TV ratings. They're only streaming.
That's so weird. Is that because people hate men?
No, it's because they're a lower division.
Because it's a lower division. Because their style of play,
the worst product,
is not good. Or is not as good as the professionals.
Yeah, but they're working on it.
Yeah, they are. And I imagine that Sue Bird and the WNBA are working on elevating across the league the style of play. MLS soccer, American soccer, the style of play, the level of play was not what it currently is. And it's not even at its peak right now, right? It's working every single year, and the bigger it gets, the more player attraction they can bring into the league, and you get top-tier players. You've got folks like Jordan Morris who choose to stay local instead of going overseas. People just love to just sit back and lazily say, oh, they don't like it because we're women. Or they just don't like it because the level of game is not where they're expecting it to be. And if that's the reason, that's on you guys, you ladies, to step it up and be a little bit better. The same way it was on the MLS to step it up and do better so people would watch them. I'm so annoyed by this. And I, by the way, come from a position of don't even like basketball. They could all go under.
You hate
the men's league and the women's league. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. A lot of you, hopefully most of, if not all of you by now, have your ballot in hand. Every single day, both on the show and on our Facebook page, I will be providing to you how I would vote in individual elections, individual campaigns, if I had the ability to vote in every one of them. Now, obviously, as a King County voter, I am subject to only the King County issues and, of course, the statewide issues. Nevertheless, I took a deep dive over the weekend into every single race, including the ones that are, you know, kind of specific to smaller communities. So, for example, I can come out here and say you should vote no on referendum number 2 in the city of Newcastle, because I don't want any more levies. Done. Got you, write that down.
Thank you for being so invested in my community.
So I thought every single day we would go over the bigger issues. And online at facebook.com/Jason Rants Show, you can take a look at some of the smaller races or the more hyper-local races. We start with, and I'm not going to spend a whole bunch of time on all of them, because, for example, you know that we support Lauren Culp for governor. That's not a surprise. Matt Larkin for attorney general, not a surprise. But you do have to remember that Joshua Freed is running a write-in campaign for lieutenant governor. Now, one might say it's really hard to get a lot of votes for a write-in campaign. It really is. You're right. In this case, you've got two hardcore leftist Democrats running up against each other, and presumably that splits the votes amongst the liberals. You only need about 35% of write-in candidates, or one write-in candidate, to get Joshua Freed into this office. So please write Joshua Freed, F-R-E-E-D, as the write-in for lieutenant governor. Treasurer, we support Dwayne Davison. Auditor, Chris Laba. Superintendent, Maya Espinoza. Secretary of State, Kim Wyman. If I get another email or tweet from someone saying, she's a rhino because she's not a partisan, I'm going to strangle you. Stop that. She is the one that you want in this office. She is the one who is responsible for elections here not being overtly political. She's running up against a hardcore progressive from Seattle. Someone said, you know, I'm not going to vote for the Democrat, but I'm not going to vote for the rhino. Who should I write in? I scolded them on Twitter. I said, listen, dum-dum, in tone. I was very polite. But in tone, listen, you dum-dum, you vote for Kim Wyman. The actual tweet was, I can appreciate that, but you're wrong. You need to vote for Kim Wyman.
Weird,
but I was thinking dum-dum. Huh?
So it's weird how different those came out.
I know. Sometimes they do vary. Washington 8. Did you know that Kim Schreier, Democrat, is a doctor?
Doctor?
She'll tell you 14,000 times per conversation if you didn't know that. She is a Seattle-style progressive. She does not represent the values, the political values of Auburn or Covington or Maple Valley, and yet she's the one who represents you. She was the beneficiary of a lot of money from out of state going into Washington 8 to put her in that spot. Jesse Jensen is a Republican. He is running. He deserves your vote. He actually wants to be there. Kim Schreier does not. Jesse Jensen actually has the political values of Buckley, of Cle Elum, of Issaquah, of Milton, the gem of Pierce County. Do you think Kim Schreier knows where Hobart actually is, or Algona? Think she hangs out there?
No.
Think she can spell Enumclaw?
No way.
Probably not. Jesse Jensen actually cares about this community. Doesn't just go to Leavenworth once a year as part of some tourist attraction. He's not just going up there to say, oh, yeah, let's do a quick weekend getaway there. That's not what he's about. He cares about everyone in this community. Jesse Jensen, Washington 8. Dave Larson is a judge. He is running for Supreme Court. In fact, he is going to be on the show at 5:45. Dave Larson does not agree with 976 and how the Washington State Supreme Court overturned it. Dave Larson is nonpartisan. Dave Larson is on your side. The Supreme Court position is arguably the most important one that you'll be voting for on a statewide level. And it's important that you vote for Dave Larson. And by the way, there are a lot of people who just vote for a name that they might recognize, or they say, oh, it's a woman, let me vote for that. Or, oh, his name sounds friendly. Jason, I know a guy on the radio who's very friendly. Let me go ahead and fill that in. Those people can have their minds changed very easily. Tell them Dave Larson. Here's one that's going to be a little bit tricky for some of you, and I fully acknowledge that. If you live in the 5th Legislative District, that's Issaquah, North Bend, you are choosing between two Democrats, Mark Mullett and Ingrid Anderson. Ingrid Anderson is a fringe, far to the left, Seattle-style progressive who is being put in a position, hopefully from her side, to rule the way special interest groups, labor unions want her to. Right now, there is a test going on in the 5th Legislative District from fringe, far to the left Democrats to see if they can buy an election. And if they can, they're going to go after every other moderate Democrat. Mark Mullett, state senator, is a moderate Democrat. 85% of the time, you and I, as Republicans, will disagree with him. You need to vote for him. You need to push out another Seattle-style progressive. And the way he loses is if Republicans look at the Democrat name next to both of them and say, I'm not going to vote. You can't do that. We were just talking to him on Friday, and I asked him about 976 and the $30 car tab fees. How does he look at it?
What I've always looked at is how our district votes on initiative. So every time we have an initiative, I dive into the weeds of how the 5th district votes, because I feel like it's my responsibility to reflect that. And our district supported the $30 car tabs 55% to 45%. Yep. And so I've always had the mindset, like, regardless what comes back from the courts, that we have to go into session, you know, as you just said, kind of looking at what do the voters want. And
what do the voters want? That's how you want your state representatives, your state senators to view issues that maybe conflict with their own politics. You need to vote for Mark Mullett. In the 31st, that's Auburn and Sumner and Bonnie Lake. Drew Stokesbury, reelect him. Over in 33, that's Tukwila and Renton and SeaTac. Carrie French is running for state representative. You should vote for her. Out in 39, these are where my people live. This is our audience. This is known as a hot zip. That's Sultan and Monroe and Darrington, Skykomish, Cedro Woolley. This is really, really easy. You vote for Keith Wagoner, Carolyn Eslick. These are important. King County as a whole, you've got three specific charter amendments that it's important, especially if you back the blue, to vote no on. Charter Amendment number 4, which is the Office of Law Enforcement Oversight, it would give them the ability to issue subpoenas. Office of Law Enforcement Oversight, OLEO. This was run by the woman we helped get kicked out of her position after she was accused of running a hostile work environment and commenting on the genitalia of a deceased man. Yeah, it's gross. This is an organization, an agency that tries to punish cops. And usually, not always, but usually, they will automatically take an anti-police position. It's run by activists. Do not give them subpoena power. You vote no on Amendment number 4 in King County. And then 5 and 6, same thing. You vote no. One of them, number 5, gives the authority to the King County Council to select a sheriff. Who do you think they're going to select? What kind of person do you think this very far to the left council, who's trying to defund the police, who do you think they're going to try to get? You don't have to like Mitzi Jo Hanknecht. I do. You don't have to. That's okay. You deserve the right to vote for that particular role. So you vote no on King County Charter Amendment number 5. Same thing for number 6, which would give the King County Council the ability to set the structure and the duties of the King County Sheriff's Department. Again, the group that wants to defund the police should not be in a position to tell the sheriff's department how they should or should not act. That is not their role. So make sure you're voting no on 4, 5, and 6 in King County. Now, of course, there are a lot of other stuff to get to all across King County. There's a lot. We can spend literally an entire hour just doing King County. But instead, I did a video that goes over all of it at facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. The video is up there. I posted it yesterday, or maybe I posted Saturday. It's very easy to find. I'm going to do one of these every single day for the various counties. Except maybe a little less passion. Because you can't be like this high each time.
You have to bring the passion.
Never mind. I'll be equally as passionate.
Thank you.
When we come back, should laid off Tacoma hotel workers automatically get their jobs back after COVID ends? That's what the Tacoma City Council is trying to do. They're talking about it. We're going to get into it when we come back. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. The Tacoma City Council is toying with an ordinance that would force hotels to rehire the people who they laid off due to the coronavirus. Of course, this only applies to the hotels in the city of Tacoma. You have to have at least 60 hotel rooms for this to apply to you. Now, they're just discussing it as of right now. It was a proposal that was brought forward by Councilmember Lillian Hunter.
Normally, we as the city and the council would not engage in employer agreements.
Uh-huh.
We don't engage in collective bargaining agreements or weigh in on that. But we understand that these are unprecedented times. There's long-term impacts, and we want to help people who are hurting. We had about 100 people or so from the Murano, 90 of which live in the city of Tacoma. So what we were looking at was a minimum employment standard that would assure that they got to return for those recall rights.
Okay. You get to decide whether or not a private company will rehire someone. Got it. Now, this ordinance, if it goes through, is meant to deal with the layoffs that are happening because, frankly, the hotel industry is getting absolutely crushed. Tacoma is not the outlier. This is happening all across the country. People aren't traveling. People not traveling means hotel rooms don't get full, meaning the staff members that they have, they've got to let them go. And so, as the ordinance is currently being discussed, it would force the hotel to, number one, provide written notice to laid off employees of job positions that become available for which those employees are qualified. And number two, it would offer available positions to the laid off employees with the greatest length of service for the hotel. This according to the Tacoma News Tribune. So in other words, you would be forced to give a job back to a laid off employee who has the greatest seniority. Now, I understand why folks might back something like this. You feel bad for the individual who maybe has worked at the hotel that we're talking about, any hotel for a long period of time and has a whole lot of experience and expertise, but they had to be laid off because of the scenario. And if COVID goes away and things return to normal and they need to make those hires again in the future to replace the jobs they let go, should that person who was let go, shouldn't they get their job back? On paper, it makes sense. But things have to work not just on paper, they have to work in real life. Because number one, if we want to be honest about this scenario, and it's not just exclusive to the hotel industry, it's exclusive to every industry. COVID has allowed some companies to get rid of bad employees that you've not been able to get rid of before. So now you can justify it.
Not here.
Well, you and I should have a conversation after the show.
Today? Of all days?
After Friday, because I can't find a fill-in for the rest of the week.
Okay.
But that is the truth. It is an unfortunate reality, mostly for the business, because they're not able to get rid of people who no longer are valued to the business. But number two, and this is the biggest part, you have no idea what the industry is going to look like after COVID. You literally have no idea. In this case, the sunset on this ordinance would be 2022, but they have the option, again, if it's passed, to extend it another year and another year after that. You don't know what it's going to look like next month. And I have to imagine that once all of this settles, once people get the vaccine and it's no longer the pandemic it currently is, or the epidemic it currently is, I imagine that things are not going to immediately get back to where they were, and maybe they never get back to where they are, where they were. Maybe they never get back to that point. And so I suspect that the jobs are going to change, where instead of having one person doing one thing, they have one person doing three things. I imagine that's going to be a part of the evolution of the way this industry, and frankly, all industries that have not been coping well with the pandemic, evolve. And so it's simply unfair to say to a business, you don't get to change your business model once the COVID situation dies down, because we expect you to go directly back to where it was beforehand. Some industries are never going to be able to do that. Some businesses are never going to want to do that. And we have to understand that's an inevitability in certain scenarios. But I'd love to hear you weigh in. You can send me a text at 1-800-465-8770. I'd love to hear it. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, King County sees record numbers for early voter turnout. What's that mean for Republicans? We're going to get into it on the Jason Rand Show.